Skull, everybody. This is Alexander Ludwig, and you are listening to The Wild Hunt.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to The Wild Hunt, the No Ship Network podcast on the History Channel series Vikings. I am your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
And if you like what you hear on this podcast, head over to noship.net and check out all of the other cool stuff that we do. Leave us a review on iTunes. See all the ways that you can support us, etc., etc., etc. And also check out the TV Time app, which is a really cool little app that I'm sure you've heard us talk about before. But if you haven't, go on and check it out. It lets you know when your favorite shows are about to come on TV. And you can also be part of a community of other people who like to watch the same shows. You can talk back and forth. The app lets you, it shows all of the shows that you watch. It does a bunch of other cool stuff. You have to check it out for yourself.
Yes, and that's one way you can communicate with us is via the TV Time app, or you can also talk to us on Twitter and Facebook. And if you would like to write in feedback, please write it into noshipnetwork@gmail.com. Okay, we are discussing Vikings Season 5, Episode 8, The Joke. This, of course, was written by Michael Hurst and directed by Jeff Wilhelmsen.
Awesome, awesome episode. One of the best in recent memory. Lots of brutal fighting. Got better every time I watched it. And I just have to put it out there. I think the winner of this episode was Halfdan.
I agree with that.
Halfdan stole my whole heart.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely came through, didn't he? So it's good. It's some intriguing moments, you know, some head scratchers on disappearances. And I think I saw some of Ivar's strategy come through. I think it's not as big a loss as we think. You know, I think he was kind of testing water. So there's a lot to talk about, a lot more to talk about than I expect. You know, it's definitely, it was a really good episode. You know, like we can go into it, but we're just going to talk about it anyway. So it's perfect.
I thought it was really well done as far as how they staged the battle, and the tension was definitely there. I felt like I was PMSing, even though I wasn't. Like I started to tear up, and there was no reason because nobody died.
Well, people died, just not, you know, not the people that we care about.
I thought Torby was going to die because the way they were, having shots of her and then shots of Guthrum. And I thought, oh my gosh, she's going to have to go save his life and then she's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather see Guthrum get it. Guthrum.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I was
not attached at all.
It's like everybody who had any importance was just like throwing criticals every time they swung. Like critical, critical, critical. It's like, man, fuck, just all should have just stood in a circle. You would have bone sawed through everybody. But it was still really cool. It wasn't overdone, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm not knocking Game of Thrones, but it had Game of Thrones. You have something similar a couple seasons ago where it's like this huge, massive battle. And it was amazing. I'm glad the way they did it because it felt kind of realistic on just the way everything went. And then when it panned out, it was this larger scale battle than what we're used to. It was fantastic.
This is definitely where they spent the most money on their budget for season 5.1. I think
it's just part one of it too.
Yeah, because there's still more to come.
Yeah.
So
yeah, could be two more episodes of it.
Okay, so let's get into recap. The episode starts in Krabagat as Ivar and company prepare to launch towards battle. Ivar asks Fitzurk if he is ready to avenge their mother. He says yes, not because she was a good mother to him, but because Lagertha deserves it. Sounds to me like he is struggling to find justification.
Yeah, it sounded a little bit milquetoast of a reason, you know, but Ivar eats it up. Like, it's like, oh yeah, that's the best reason you could ever think of to do this. But
Fitzurk states, if he kills Ube, won't his fame be assured? And this is where Ivar is really pleased.
That was a little bit of a weird one for me, because he didn't really answer the question yes or no. He just said, well, if I do kill him, won't that assure my fame? So that wasn't like a reaffirmation of dedication to this cause. It wasn't like he was like, yes, I will kill him. Right. Or, no, I don't think I could do it. It was a dodge answer.
Yeah, exactly. It deflected.
Yeah, it made Ivar happy, though. It would make him notorious, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Viking culture, it seems like it's possible these things happen quite a bit. I mean, you figure we have Halfdan and his brother, all the Ragnarssons, you know, so if you live in a village and then you move to another one and then they decide to fight each other, you know, I think the outcome comes to who wins. You know, like if you win, you're good in the eyes of the history.
You're justified.
Yeah.
But just like they say, history is written by the victors. So
exactly.
There's a self-justifying thing there. You don't, your intentions don't have to be great at all, but
But I think this is how anybody who hangs out with Ivar has to kind of deal with him. It's just tell him what he wants to hear, keep him happy so he doesn't try and like do some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to. You want the right answer.
He's still that, in some ways, he's still that kid that needs everybody around him doing things. Only now it's not so much a physical stuff. It's more emotional and psychological. He needs them to be yes men and to be on the same page and to want the same things he wants, you know? So, or at least he needs them to want to win.
Yeah. And plus, he's probably worried about him turning on him in the middle of the battle, too.
Yeah, that could be cause for concern.
Mm-hmm. Because then he could just turn around and stab you in the back.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too sure about Fitzurk, so it was probably a good idea to send him in a different direction, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Go over here and do this.
Harald doesn't want Astrid to join them because she's pregnant. She insists without too much pushback from him. He says that he should have known the woman the gods have chosen for his wife would be very brave and courageous, so her wish is his command. Ivar spies Haemond and yells out, "Your grace!" Haemond gets on his case. The fact that Haemond is his captive and he can still talk to Ivar like that, I find very pleasing.
Well, it makes sense, though. I find it pleasing as well, but it makes sense that he's going to let him have that leeway because it's like he's captured this pet and he wants this pet to act in its truest nature at all times because that's what attracted him to capturing him in the first place. So I think Ivar would be supremely disappointed if Haemond became like this meek kind of yes man. And just, even though he likes to have yes men around him to a certain extent, he would not be pleased if the bishop was showing that kind of character. He wants him to have that fire and that pushback, you know, because he's like, that's the essence of who this person is, and I want to use him as, I would say a pawn, but he's going to use him as a bishop. Oh, ba-doom-tsh. Anyway, bad joke, bad chess joke. But
no, good.
Well, do you think he's somehow functioning like as Ragnar for him in a way?
You think?
I don't know.
He's using Haemond as Ragnar?
Maybe.
Like as a...
He definitely
as a,
got the Floki, you know, fanaticism, so Floki was a father figure.
If you're saying like maybe as a moral compass in a certain way, not to do what he says, but to have somebody around him who has that kind of backbone and faith in themselves and their direction, then I would say yes.
Seems like Fitzurk would be the one that has that need in somebody more than Ivar.
Yeah, but Fitzurk's used to being neglected. I mean, he even mentions about his mom this episode, like, she didn't care, you know? So I think he's used to just kind of floating wherever he needs to be, because no one cared about him when he was a kid.
I must just start calling him Flotsam.
Flotsam. Flotsam. Fitzurk.
That's good.
Ivar gives Haemond his sword. Its magic only works for its owner, after all. And at this point, sails are up and they're heading out. We've got some hashtag no ships. Michael Guy says, Fitzurk looks like that one creepy kid in high school that didn't like to shower. Hashtag no ship. And he follows up with, Ivar's hair makes him look like King Koopa. Hashtag Vikings. Hashtag no ship.
He does look like Koopa.
We didn't get this. Em and I didn't get this. I figured that it might have been from the Mario Brothers movie because Koopa Trooper, but that's all. And apparently it is, but I had never seen it before. We just saw the gif that he sent along with it, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, and he had a picture of, it looks like Dennis Hopper playing King Koopa with the same hairstyle as Arvar, but except it's blonde. And we also have Jasmine Nightbloom writing in to say, curious, when exactly did Fitzurk come to the conclusion that fratricide would lead to fame? Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no ship.
It was sometime after he had breakfast that morning, and he was like, Ivar's going to ask me, what's my motivation for getting into this big battle? And he had three lines of bullshit he was ready to give. You know, the second one was because it's Tuesday. And the third one was because I don't have anything better to do and you're pretty much making me. So fratricide sounded the best out of all three, I think.
I think we learned back when we were covering earlier seasons of Vikings, when we were discussing Jarl Borg and his history with his brother when his brother poisoned his wife, his previous wife.
Right.
Remember he was carrying around her skull? Mm-hmm. That it was common among brothers to vie for power like that. So I don't know if that's what Flotsam is playing off of.
Hmm. That's a good idea, though. It's because he's trying to ingratiate himself to Ivar and stay on the good side of him, you know, and say like, okay, this is like we were talking about just a few minutes ago. It's what he wants to hear.
Yeah.
You know, so as to whether or not he actually believes it or not, I don't know. I don't know. That's hard to pin down.
Now we're in Kattegat. Lagertha and Bjorn prepared for their battle as well. Bjorn still treats Guthrum like a son, as promised. Torvi says goodbye to her youngest children, leaving them in the care of Margaret. Is there no one else?
Right.
Margaret watches fretfully as Ube and Torvi walk together towards the boats.
This scene was interesting to me because it shows you, I think it's a little bit of distraction, or what is it when they want you to look the other way? The director wants you to look the other way.
Sleight of hand?
It's dis something, but I don't know. Anyway, maybe sleight of hand, because they're trying to, I felt like what was trying to be conveyed to me was a little bit of dissension in Kattegat. There's not all as good on the home front, because you have this scene where Bjorn walks up, like you said, and he's cool with Guthrum, and then he walks away, and Torvi sees him go over to Snæfrid, right? And then he goes into battle. So she's kind of like scorned a little bit there. Then she turns around, gives her kid to Margrét to hold on to while she goes into battle. Then her and Uwe walk together, dressed the same, away in battle. And then Margrét is looking. So everybody's disappointed. You know, everybody, not everybody, I guess the women really, except for Snæfrid, because she got what she wanted. But the women are just kind of like, you know, one person's jealous of the other, who's jealous of the other, and
for rightful reasons. I mean, the way he talks to his son and then totally ignores her and walks off, it's like he could have at least said, "Oh, your mom and I are going to be in battle," or something. He just ignored her. You know, it's awful. That's all I could think about while he was doing. It's like, come on, man, say something. You know,
I know. Hey,
your mom's like, powerful, yeah, warrior too. She's going
to
be there with us.
You guys broke up. But you don't have to be a jerk about it.
Exactly.
You know? Be cool. Be cool.
Wow.
So do you think there's a point to this where it does seem like there's a little bit more unification on the Ivar front or Ivar side of things? Even though, I mean, I think Astrid is the one exception to that.
Yeah.
But is this like showing us a contrast where maybe the Kattegat side, even though they won this battle, their feet is made of mud?
Ooh.
That's a good point.
I didn't think of that.
Or their feet are made of mud.
So they're coming. they're gonna win the battle, but come back to like a divided camp where everything's not all happy and flower time.
Yeah, to an extent.
I felt like it was the sleight of hand what was going on, but I think you're right. It is going to have some impact down the road. That schism there is like Margaret's not done being the Margaret that we don't like.
Yeah,
she's still got some tricks up her sleeve, and something bad is going to happen with that. So.
And she's left to her own devices now. Nobody's there to stop her.
And she's got Torvi's kid.
Yes, that's what I'm going to call the villain next season, the Margaret. Somebody I dislike. She's such a Margaret.
Yeah.
The Margaret of the season is...
Exactly.
Instead of a Heather, she's a Margaret.
Yeah.
We have a hashtag no ship. And Jasmine Nightbloom says, Torvi, I wouldn't leave your children with bitter Margrét, considering her ill-informed view of Kattegat's so-called ruling bloodlines. Just saying. Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no ship.
Yeah, then walk away with her husband.
I mean, and Torvi knows better because Margrét's been confiding in to her as much as she's been in Uwe.
I'm sorry, Torvi. Both your kids died while you were away for 2 days. I don't know what happened. They were out of my sight for just a second.
Yeah, there was a traveler.
Yeah.
There's a history of leaving Beren's children in the care of other people that are not their mothers.
It's true.
And who don't give a shit.
Right.
With about a poor survival rate. Poor.
So next we have Beren asking Halfdan if he's ready because he will be fighting his brother. Halfdan says, "It is the same for you. Some trees have to fall down in the forest." And I like that line because it reminds me of kenning, which is like a poetic way of speaking that they've done in Old Norse poetry.
Hmm.
The scene ends with the Kattegat forces exiting the city gate. So isn't a lot of times like a forest stead, all the trees are from the same origin, the same initial tree?
Yeah, the seeds fell from that tree.
Right. So to say, like, you know, that shows a lot of, like, knowledge about
arboring. I took it to
arborist.
Mean, like, it was a real arboration. I don't know. We're making up words at this point. I took it to mean it was just a more poetic and nice way of saying, well, you can't make an omelet without cracking some eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's get to this. If that has to, it's best avoidable, but if it's unavoidable, then that's just what has to happen.
Now we're in Iceland. Floki observes his people at their work. Later, he commends them for their work and suggests next they should build a temple. Eivind is not on board. He is very angry. He worries about how they will survive the winter. Floki suggests that Eivind should sail back to Kattegat. Eivind says that he cannot ever go back. And just want to point out that Anud has fruit punch mouth from all that Kool-Aid she's been drinking.
Well, this it calls into, doesn't call into question, it brings to mind the Viking sense of honor. They all left, and they left Lagertha in a time of need. Yep. She was not, you know, she was not happy with them. She was pretty upset with the situation, but she let it happen because she saw the futility of trying to make them stay. But that's the honor that's going to keep them there. But there's not enough honor to honor in good faith the mission that they came to do, to try to make the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got full measure on one thing and then half measure at best on another. And maybe not even half, like quarter measure maybe.
I think to possibly help Floki's cause a little bit, he's always kind of supervising. I think maybe if he got in there, he's like a master woodworker and helped out a little, it would be a little better. You know, like, okay, man, you got to kind of get dirty a little bit. I know you found it.
I was bitching about that when I was watching.
Em mentioned that no less than three times. And yeah. I agree. I agree with both of you guys completely. It's like you're not really raising the morale of the troops by sitting there playing with your crow or your raven or whatever while they're doing all the work, especially with the talent that you have and the skill that you can employ in something like that. You should be down there because you're kind of giving Eivind the leg to stand on when he's going, oh, you know, you want to be king, you want to be the ruler, and et cetera, et cetera. Even though he really doesn't, or at least I don't think he does, it gives people this kind of idea that he could be right about that. And that's the last thing you want to do, is give that one dissenter a little bit of credence to what he's saying.
And he was getting a little ahead of himself talking about building a temple and everything. You know, it's like, come on.
Yeah, prioritize, folks. Yeah.
I'm not a religious person, so I do personally find that ridiculous to stop everything to build a temple. But I think Eivind maybe should have a different approach when he's voicing his opinion about it. But at the same time, he brought his entire family, it sounds like. So being the patriarch of the family, and feeling like you just brought your whole family there to die, you must feel like a massive fucking failure.
Yeah.
So I get why he feels the way he feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's talking about his grandkid who's going to be born and he thinks is going to have no future.
Yeah. He's got at least two sons, or a son and a daughter there, and also a grandchild on the way.
Yeah. I agree with what you're saying about the temple too, because temples are, for religious people, are going to be powerful symbols, and they're going to help them keep their faith and do great things while they're there, because they're going to have that religious touchstone. But they're going to be built better and have more importance down the road if you can spend all day building one and then go sleep in your warm house with your family rather than waiting until the temple is built, then building the rest of everything. So it's kind of, the priorities are a little bit reversed there. Like, let's get the basic human needs taken care of, then we move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would have approached it, but, you know.
Yeah, I think Eivind's frustrated because he just sailed with a bunch of crazy people to a place where he thought there was going to be farmland, because Floki told them there would be. Yeah.
So you're saying you agree with where he's coming from, you just wish that he had a better execution and maybe like a little bit more of a sympathetic view towards Floki's intentions.
Not really sympathetic view, I agree with his view. I just think that he's not winning anybody over.
No, he's not, no.
A little more
unfortunately
tact.
So we have a hashtag no shit. Michael Guy says, they don't know the first rule of colonization. They need for native population to exploit and blame all of your problems on. Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no shit. So they went to the wrong place.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the Vikings are fucking up on the colonization front without an indigenous population to lord over and to have a scapegoat for all your problems. And it's tough going, you know.
So now the armies face each other. Lagertha doesn't think it is right that the sons of Ragnar should fight and slaughter one another. They send emissaries. Bjorn and Halfdan from Kattegat, Harald and Fitzurk from Krappegat. Bjorn says, if we must fight, then we must fight. But first let us discuss the alternatives in good faith. Harald says they are willing, but first they should exchange hostages. Good faith is not really enough. They trade brothers. They plan to meet again tomorrow. The emphasis that Harald places on hostages.
Well, you know, from Halfdan's point of view, it's like, give me my brother, who in his mind is going to come back over to see his way of things. And he's probably saving from a shitty situation. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, just because you sailed with Bjorn and did some raids, you know what I mean, and touched some wieners, doesn't mean that you have to like fight with him against me. So I'll give you this opportunity. We can all save face. And then, of course, nobody wants Fitzurk. So he's kicking him back to Bjorn and saying, take this one with you. You know, take your plus one. But is not to be. Both of them, to like Halfdan, not to my surprise, because I thought he was going to follow through with that. And then, but Fitzurk, to my surprise, does stay the course with what he said he was going to do, at least for now.
Well, he doesn't want Ivar creeping up on him in the middle of the night. yeah. cutting his throat because he would do it. Dude,
I'm gonna get Lagertha, but I'm gonna get you first.
I just hate how inscrutable he is, because it seems like we should have some sort of handle on him as to why he is siding with Ivar. I really can't figure it out.
No, I don't. I agree with you. I don't really feel
Ivar. I think he's terrified of Ivar. I really do. I mean, we didn't get to see the scene where they killed the two kids, and when he's on the boat, he sees Ivar, and he gets off, and he's kind of like, you know. And I think he kind of sees his brother. Because seeing where he came from and how what he's doing with himself, instead of being like crippled at home, he's really put it out there. And the guy's scary, and I think he's a little afraid, and I think he's a lot afraid. I think it's a fear thing, because when you're gonna go on the other side, Ivar would see him and kill him first. I think he would have ran him over with his cart or something to that effect. I mean, it's just me. It's just a hunch. I don't have anything to back it up, but I do. I really think it's fear.
Yeah, I don't. He doesn't seem afraid. But I'm not saying that that's incorrect.
Yeah,
I'm wondering maybe if he's just a piggybacker and he sees Ivar's trajectory is going to be more successful as far as the fame, since he's already mentioned fame earlier in this episode, and he doesn't see Ube as having any sort of pathway towards that.
Yeah, because if Ivar's successful, he's the second in line for Kattegat. If he goes with his brothers, he's never going to be in line for Kattegat because of the amount of people that are ahead of him. So maybe it's just a greed thing. Like, maybe Margaret got in his ear before he left and was like, you know, you got to kind of put yourself in the right direction to be in charge. Because that does kind of make sense. So I take everything I said about fear. I like that. I mean, I like what you just said.
It's possible that Margaret did get in his ear.
Yeah.
Just don't give us a flashback scene of that. I don't please. Need any.
Yeah, that's...
It's cool. Show it to the Europeans.
What if... Fitzirk and a handful of other people are the only ones to survive the Sami attack with the blow darts in the forest. Mm-hmm. So they get captured by the Kattegat side. And then, you know, Fitzirk's like, all right, I give up. I'll hang out with you guys. And they just pawn him off on Margaret. That way Ube and Torvi can be together. You know, just be like, hey, remember him? And then she could start whispering in his ear. She's like, oh, I just got knocked down another peg. But, hey, so what do you think about taking out your brother Ube? You could just kind of start over.
Oh, yeah.
She would really have to start over, because she would have to, like, make him useful first. And then go from there.
Oh, man.
She's not even she's not finding a use for the tool. She has to create the tool first.
Yep. So now at camp, Ube questions Fitzirk. Fitzirk is cagey throughout. He claims to not regret staying with Ivar. He says, what is the point of regret? Ube asks about Haemond. Lagertha appeals Fitzirk, asking him to help them avoid needless slaughter. So I truncated that. But I really like this scene, because this, actually, I think it's a little bit later. But, you know, it actually kind of echoes back to last episode, and we talked about it on our last podcast about Fitzirk and fate. And how he sees himself within that whole idea, which, you know, Flotsam is a good name.
And he says, you know, what good is regret? Well, regret actually serves a pretty good purpose if you intend to go forward with your actions being better than they were previously. I mean, I don't need to give anybody lessons on that. We understand it. Mm-hmm. But if you're completely fatalistic and you feel like the gods are just pushing you, and you have no agency in your own life, then you really are just going to disregard the concept of regret.
Exactly. So, like, if you haven't made any decisions, why would you regret anything?
Yeah. So then you also scrub away responsibility, culpability, and all of the abilities that go along with that. What a nice way to live life. Hey, whatever, man. I didn't do it.
Meanwhile, Harald questions Halfdan about his decision to fight with Lagertha. His reason is that Beorn saved his life. Ivar does not believe this is a good reason. They have chosen to live a dangerous life, and events like those come with the territory. He thinks he gives whatever happened between him and Beorn too much importance. Harald tells Halfdan he does not want to have to kill him. Ivar says that Halfdan needs to choose between a friend or a brother. To him, the answer is obvious, which is an interesting point for Ivar to make.
Right.
He is warring against his own brothers right now, and my take on that is because he still feels slighted by his own brothers, Sigurd and Ube, not agreeing with him every second. So
very immature. Very immature way to view things. And this is where Halfdan really started to shine for me in this episode, because here was his chance to show if his true colors were going to be to, like, you know, be a snake and go back to his brother, go back on his word. This is when he was going to do it. And he didn't. And he was just like, look, this guy saved my life. And this means something to him. I was thinking about it. And it's like, here he goes out raiding and exploring new places. Not really raiding, but exploring new places with Bjorn, who treats him as an equal. they're friends. They have adventures together. He saves his life, and then he comes back, and he has free will and his own agency to live life like he wanted. Like he said, his MO was to live every second of his life and get the most out of it. If he sides with his brother, he's a taken for granted entity who is just going to be always going to be there for bro kind of thing, living in the shadow of the guy who wants to conquer Norway, you know, on and on and on. Boring, right? You know, who wants to do that? Like he said it. He was like, who wants to be the brother of the king of Norway?
Yeah.
Or the guy who wants to be the king of Norway. So I thought it was great that he followed through on everything. And that's why Halfdan has my whole heart.
Yeah. Doesn't bring up a really good point. It's like Bjorn saved my life and then we ate somebody together. Like literally ate a fucking man and another one, if you know what I mean. But it's definitely like something that should have come up because all of them would have stopped and looked at him like, yeah, they cooked them for us. That's the kind of place we were in, you know, kind of shake it up, you know, it would have stopped me and been like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. You'd be like, Harold, brother, I've had so much meat in my mouth in different ways than you can imagine. Yeah. And I just, you know, it changed me. I ate a human being.
That's a bonding moment. We ate someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's not just good story. You're just, you know, a good story to tell people. That's something that holds people together.
This is actually one of the things that made this episode so awesome, which you guys have already talked about. You guys were predicting that he would stick with Bjorn. I wasn't sure. So this made it so much more interesting for me that I was incorrect because the story gets so much more exciting when it goes against what you think is going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I don't ever have any ego about any of my predictions with the one exception of a few seasons ago.
Which one is that?
You guys know what I'm talking about. We don't need to rehash.
I don't remember. No.
Yeah, that's the only one. But that was because I was the only one who thought that Bjorn would do what he was going to do. But anyway, that's just more of a joke. But like, I try not to attach too much ego and invest too much in my predictions of stuff because when you're wrong and it's an interesting story because of it, it gets that much more interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's what you're trying to say. So I'm just kind of, sorry, I'm just rehashing what you just said. But it's true, though. It's true. When you're wrong about your prediction and the story maintains and gets more interesting, it's that much more fun because you're like, cool, I didn't expect that. Now what? You know?
So this scene actually ends with Ivar crawling away, which effectively acts as an exclamation point on his little statement there where he says the answer is obvious. Haman begins to quote a Psalm chapter 2, verse 8. He must seem a wizard to those guys.
Right.
Like, nobody does that in another language around. Like, if somebody just started sounding like they were quoting some sort of, like, magical verse or scripture in another language. Just... Yeah,
looking off to the moon, you know?
Yeah.
Very solemn, while another guy punches the earth and crawls away. Because it was even louder. He really sounded like he's just kind of like, man, punch. Stupid.
You know, you wonder if there's like a couple of Vikings that are on their side who are looking at all this happening from the edges going, man, I really should have listened to my guidance counselor and just been like a boat builder or something. This sucks. One thing before we move on from this scene is that Ivar kind of shits on what Halfdan has to say and says you're putting too much importance on what Bjorn did for you. And, you know, Halfdan comes back and says he's cynical. It's ironic to me that this is going on because Halfdan is displaying not all, but the majority of the qualities that Ivar told Haman that he wishes to see in a person, that he wishes to see on the earth, about that kind of loyalty and dependability and unwaveringness. And you know, so it seems weird that Ivar would be so dismissive. And I don't know. I felt like it was very ironic.
Enemy. That's why he's dismissive, because he didn't do what he wanted him to do. If he had come over, he would have been all over him and happier, I think. You know what I mean? That he's an enemy and he's not doing what Ivar wants. He's like, whatever.
So you're saying he's showing the qualities that Ivar says he values, but because he's doing it facing the other direction, he's going to be immature about it and go, well, you should just forget all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it makes sense. Because it's still all these brothers fighting each other. It'd be hard to plan for anything, because even like us, we're like, well, is this person going to fight with his brother? Is this person going to go over here? Can you imagine battle strategy when not knowing if your generals are going to turn on you in the middle of the battle? So that's annoying, especially to him.
Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah, okay.
But I like what you're saying, Steve, because it is like the person he needs actually is of his people, like mm-hmm. right in his homeland.
Right.
And he thinks he had to seek it out.
Yeah.
Without,
yeah.
you know, outside and, you know, maybe sometimes the regard they give their father is also a blind spot. Like trying to do what their father did is not always the best.
Right. Yeah. Because it strips them of their own individual agency. Like, what do they want out of life? You know? So they kind of take whatever their dominating nature is and then go, the little part of dad that was like this, well, that's what Ragnar wants. He wants mm-hmm. all of us to be this way. He wants all of us to be ruthless. He wants all of us to be a farmer. Or if you're Fitzurk, he's like, you know, Fitzurk's kind of like the Ragnar that was hanging out with Edu, but without Edu.
I was just about to say that. That's exactly it, right? That's exactly
just
it.
Just to hang out in the hut, drink all day, take naps.
Swallowing snakes.
Doesn't yeah. sound so bad, except for the swallowing snakes. But you're just not being very productive and mm-hmm. useful to anybody else. So, you know.
We have a hashtag no ship. Jasmine Nightbloom says, friend or brother, does anyone truly know if Ivar would choose either? I honestly think he would just kill them all. Hashtag Viking, hashtag no ship. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hard to debate that one.
No need for you anymore.
Yeah.
So now we have Ube begging Fitzurk to not risk his life for Ivar's. Fitzurk asks, hasn't the gods already asked who shall he sacrifice his life for? Ube thinks that the gods are just waiting for him to make a decision. Ube doesn't want to have to kill Fitzurk. He also says that Fitzurk is still his little brother. So we cut to Harald and Halfdan really quick, and Harald says to Halfdan, you're part of my fate as I am part of yours. Stay. And I found both of these scenes between Ube and Fitzurk and Harald and Halfdan touching. I thought both of the people who were pleading seemed to be honest, speaking from the heart, and I thought it was well done, well performed.
I agree. And I like the subtle differences between the two, because you had, as sincere as they both were, Halfdan was kind of giving a warning, like, if we meet on the battlefield, I will kill you. And then Ube was kind of telling Fitzurk, like, I don't want to have to kill you, mm-hmm. you know, so you could debate that, but I think there's a difference there between the two, like, please don't make me do this. And the other one's like, I will do this if I see you. If you ultimately choose not to be with me and we see each other on the battlefield, I'm going to kill you.
Do you think when Ube said, you're still my little brother or whatever he said, is that what bothers Fitzurk?
Yeah, because there's a part of it.
Because to him, it's like being Ube's dog, as
yes.
he was mm-hmm. saying earlier. Even though Ivar treated him like a dog,
yes.
openly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But see, Ivar gives rewards in a certain amount of brotherly approval with any time that Fitzurk is going to agree with his intentions. You know what I mean? Anytime if he's figured out that if he's a yes man, he gets the doggy treats. Whereas if you're over in Ube's camp, you actually have to be somewhat of a grown up, mature person and do things based on their own merit for him to have a high appraisal mm-hmm. of you. So, or maybe that's just me kind of romanticizing it, but mm-hmm. it did seem like a little bit too close to the faithful puppy dog going, hey, you're my little brother. Just hang out with me. It's like, oh, okay, great. So no matter where I go, I'm just seen as, you know, the kid,
mm-hmm.
even though Ivar's the youngest.
Is he?
He is the youngest, but I think crazy just kind of
yeah,
just obliterates the whole.
Sigurd might have been younger, but then.
No, I don't think Sigurd.
No, Ivar was the last arrival. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was Ube, Fitzurk, Sigurd, then Ivar. So no insight on the little brother thing, Paul?
No, I think we touched on it. You know, it sucks, but I like what we came up with about him wanting succession and seeing possibly this is where it's at. You know, I mean, we don't have a whole lot on him anyway because he doesn't give it to us, but I don't know.
I was asking you because you're a little brother.
Yeah, so no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there is a little bit of a burden being the youngest, you know, not much because there's a lot of advantages to being the youngest too. But, and it could possibly have been, like you said, his tone on how he talked to him about it, you know, like, oh, you're my little brother. And said, look, you're my brother. You're a formidable warrior. Kind of fluff him up a little bit and then tell him you want him to stay. He kind of does come at him like he's that little kid still, which, did it affect his decision? I don't think so. I think when he got off that boat, he made that decision, you know? But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure. I kind of laughed a little when he was like, oh, you're my little guy, you know? Like, hey, dude, I kill people too, you know? We're yeah. good.
I have done. So like, I didn't think of this until you said it, you know, about the warrior thing. What mm-hmm. if Ube had said, listen, we need you. You know what I mean? You are one of Ragnar Lothbrok's sons. You're my brother. You are yeah. a great warrior. You're an asset to our side. Please be
exactly.
with us. This is entire. Instead, he's like, come on, little buddy, you're my little bro, you know, like kind of giving him a noogie and, yeah. and just like talking down to him. It was a bad strategy.
Yeah. I don't want to have to kill you. It should have been like, I don't want to have to face off with you.
There you go. Yeah. I don't want to have to fight you. Mm-hmm. Like, make it seem like it's going to be a fair thing. Like, I could die too. And, you know, neither of us want to die.
Which is, it's tragic because Ube was speaking from affection.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sucks. Mm-hmm. It's like his intentions were good, but it just, he hit the wrong notes with it, you know, and it was already a foregone conclusion. He wasn't going
to
get him.
The following morning, the leaders of both armies are again face to face. Bjorn states his case as to why they should not battle. He talks of the consequences of civil war and the memory of their father. Ube asks Ivar for forgiveness, and Lagertha states her right to the throne of Kattegat. She says what they should be discussing is how they combine their armies and direct them out towards new lands, new conquests, and new opportunities. It's a pity to kill each other over a piece of land that is already theirs. Lagertha turns to Astrid, saying she does not want to fight her. Astrid says she is now married to Harald. Halfdan asks, what will they gain? Harald says they would gain the world. Bjorn turns to Ivar, since Harald is obviously intractable. He tells Ivar that it is really up to him. If they can find an accord, King Harald would not be able to stop them. Lagertha tells Ivar if he fights either way, he will lose. Ube again tries his hand at appealing to Ivar by bringing up Ragnar. Ivar asks for horns of mead and says, there will be no battle today or tomorrow. Harald is up out of his chair, demanding what is wrong. Ivar says he can't kill another brother after Sigurd. He renounces his claim to Kattegat. Ivar asks Ube for his forgiveness. I knew the whole time he was fucking lying. I was up out of my seat going, you fucking liar. No way.
Yeah. I thought it was a ploy on his part to get into the camp. And everybody's like, okay, we're not going to fight. And then when their guards were down, they're all going to pull their swords out and just start cutting people down when they don't have their weapons. I was like, ooh, that's a dirty plan. It's a dirty
Trojan
plan.
Horse.
Exactly.
Yeah. Trojan Ivar. I didn't think of it like that, but I thought maybe what was happening was they had all this strategic talk in the previous episode about dividing armies and, you know, flanking and doing this. So I was thinking that maybe a third of Harald and Ivar's forces were somewhere else. And so he was biding time so they could come up behind them.
Yeah.
And then he was just going to, like, at the last minute go, psych, you know, but then we get what we get. And it kind of leaves you wondering why he did what he did.
It's amazing to me that you guys had those elaborate thought processes, because I was just going, liar!
Well, we all three of us knew that he was lying. No, I don't think anybody bought it, even though the actor sold it.
Oh,
you know, he did a great job. But there is a small part.
You can tell he's lying.
What's that?
You can tell he's lying, which is good acting.
Yeah, because you got to play that subtlety. You have to, like, convince, but then also let people know. The wink, wink, nudge, nudge while you're in character. There was a small, small part of me in my mind that was going, all right, maybe because when he apologized to Ube, Ube didn't get up. He sat there like he's on a throne and just kind of nodded his head like, I accept your apology.
Well, I maybe. But the thing is that Ube had asked him for forgiveness first.
That's true. That's true. Okay, yeah. So that throws a monkey wrench in there.
Which, with somebody like Ivar, that should go a long fucking way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is psychological warfare on his part. You know, it's kind of like, I'm going to apologize, then I'll make y'all look really fucking dumb. Because how dare you think I'm going to fucking forgive her killing my mom, which is his banner right now. You know, and that might have worked on a lesser opponent, not these guys. You know, they're battle-hardened.
So Ivar's just acting like Trump at this point. You know, like, he says one thing one day, and then the next day he sends a tweet out, which is the equivalent of the ale in the face that totally contradicts, you know, what he said, and then, you know.
So now with mead in hand, almost all say skull, Harald immediately pours his mead on the ground. Lagertha sees this and pulls her cup away from her lips. Ivar waits until Ube has taken a sip before throwing his mead into Ube's face. The joke is on Ube. I think the whole thing was crafted just for Ube's benefit. Ivar asks Ube how blue are his eyes, and apparently the blueness was an indicator of his fragility. I looked this up. It is true. People who have different types of osteogenesis imperfecta do have a blue-gray tinge to the sclera of their eyes.
And it gets worse, apparently, like if they, or is that kind of like a wives' tale thing about it?
I didn't read anything like that where, you know,
it comes on
because you're more fragile at a moment. I think it's like, from what I gathered, I think it's a constant.
Oh, okay.
I think they're like retconning the reason why they enhanced his eyes last season. That's what I think.
I can see that.
That's worthy, though.
Yeah, I'm down with it. Mm-hmm. I'm cool. Thanks for explaining. We have a hashtag no ship, Jasmine Nightbloom. Lagertha, Kattegat was carved out by Ragnar and then by me. Ivar triggered. Hashtag Vikings. Hashtag no ship.
I can see them all getting back to camp and they're like patting Ivar on the back for the funny prank, you know, and it just cracked me up. It's like, oh, so sweet.
Half Denji really had me going there. You had me going.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Harold.
Big pats on
the Harold, sorry.
He eventually gets the joke, and that's when he laughs.
Mm-hmm.
He does get it. That's why this episode's called a joke.
Yeah, it was a beautiful setup, though, like the scenery and everything itself with the banners, you know, the bannermen flying their flags. And then when they separate and they pull them down in their spears, it was really, like, whoever the director was for this episode really did an excellent job. Because it could have been boring.
Yeah,
down in the middle of like the battlefield like it usually is. Like this was an elaborate scene, so it was beautiful. I enjoyed it.
Ivar then asks Ube how could he forgive Lagertha for killing their mother. His anger ramps as he screams that he will kill Lagertha. Lagertha pours out her mead and says, "You can try."
Ooh, burn.
Yeah, Alex, who Anderson's acting was really good here, because there's that point where he says Lagertha's name and you could just, it's like he's tasting the bile in his mouth when he says it. So
he's
good.
Spitting.
Ivar tells Ube that he is no longer his brother. You were once my legs, but not anymore. And this is when Harold laughs because he's enjoying the joke.
You were my odor.
It's such an extreme reaction to what is just mainly just a disagreement between brothers.
Mm-hmm. It's Ivar's personality.
I mean, Ivar's the one who killed Sigurd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay to kill your brother, but then if somebody kills your mother, and you, I don't know. I mean, I know there's a difference there, but like,
you know how guilt can like come out in like disproportionate ways or in like malignant ways? Is that what this is?
It could be. It depends on how much you believe that he actually feels guilty about killing his brother, though.
Yeah.
That's what that's predicated on.
Yeah, it's the fuel for his fire, though. It's what he's based everything on. It's what he's told his armies, the reason why he's going in to do this. So he has to believe it to an extent. You know, like, it's crazy, but, you know, other wars have been started over things. I don't want to say it's small that she killed his mom, but it's just what he's gravitated and attached himself. And then he's got it in his head. He's going to build this legacy. And the first step would be to fulfill, you know, revenge for his mother. You know, it's crazy that you would go this far and kill your rest of your family off. But, you know, hey, it's the times, you know.
What is the word for that? Consider
collateral damage.
Collateral damage.
Good job.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Ivar challenges Ube and the rest to just leave since they didn't want to battle in the first place. Swords are drawn. Lagertha cautions Ube, telling him not now. Harold catches Astrid sharing a look with Lagertha. Harold tries one more time to get Halfdan to join him. He strikes Halfdan when unrequited and promises to kill him. We have some hashtag no ships. Christian Callahan says, why does Crapagat army get all the uncontested cheap shots? Hashtag no ships. So he's referring to the me to the face to Ube and the strike in the face to Halfdan.
I think the explanation there is because it's a little bit of foreshadowing for the audience to let you know that the Kattegat side of things has the moral high ground. Mm-hmm. And so all of these guys are being cast as the villains, the bad guys, and with the bad intentions and the deceitfulness and so on and so forth. Whereas you have the people on Kattegat who are suing for peace from a position of strength. So that lets you know that it's like, look, here's our hand. Right here, take our hand. We can combine armies and go out and do all this other stuff. So that's being turned down. So I think it's one more way to kind of cement the identity of good guy, bad guy in our heads.
Michael Guy says, I'm not sure if Harold is an idiot or resigned to his fate. Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no ship.
Maybe a little bit of both. I don't really think Harold's an idiot. I think he's actually a very smart and shrewd leader. But he's pointing his guns in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I really like his confidence and his point of view. The fact that he poured out his mead right there, not having the fact that his right-hand man, Ivar, who's supposed to be with him in battle, has all of a sudden turned. And he's still just, no, I'm not agreeing to this. Going to pour out my mead right here.
So I wonder if that's a thing, though. Like when you get mead to sign a peace accord or to do a peace accord, if you are not participating, you have to dump out yours. Because drinking is like acquiescing to the what's being put
the
on the table. Yeah, the agreement.
Yeah, I mean, because I was paying attention to Lagertha, because once she saw him pour out his mead, she just, okay, I'm not going to drink mine just now. Mm-hmm. It looks like we're going to have to debate a little bit more. And yeah. then it was when Ivar started saying how he was going to kill her. And that's just like, all right. And she dumps hers out. She's like, we're battling.
Now, they could have saved a lot of lives if they had just fought it out there. But that would have been a super sad moment, all those families killing each other. Because I'm pretty sure the Kattegat side would have won. I think they had the better warriors on their side. You know, with Bjorn and Lagatham.
They would have saved a lot of lives, and that would have given both sides the moral high ground. Because why bring everybody else into your fucking family dispute?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the proletariat in me thought for a second, like, you know, what if both sides had surrounded them? At the all of the people in there and said, hey,
just killed
none
them.
Of us are figure this out because none of this, if you either come out of here with a peace deal or none of you come out alive.
Oh my God, that would have been like,
how about
oh
that?
Oh my God, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Now that doesn't fit with the thrust of the show, but like just thinking from like a common person point of view, because I know what my place in life is. If, you know, if there's ever going to be a draft again and we had to go to war, I'm just cannon fodder. You know what I mean? I'm Operation Human Shield. Give me a gun and send me to the front line. I'm no general or anything like that. And, you know, you think about like sacrifices that people make for their country or whatever. Think mm-hmm. about like the Greatest Generation, what everybody did to World War II, what everybody did for the war effort for World War II, because they knew if they didn't, and the Axis powers won, their way of life would change. None of these people fighting on either side, Kattegat or Crappegat, are going to do anything different after this war is over than they did the day before yesterday. They're going to go back to their farms. They're going to go back to their whatever trade that they employ in their particular society, and they're not going to be any richer or healthier or happier. But in the interim, they have to risk life and limb. Imagine being that one guy who had his arm just smashed. He's going to be dead from infection, you know, if he doesn't die from the pain. So it's like, I know that's not what the show is about, and I know this is never going to happen, but that was like, that's my secret fantasy, is to have them just all the, like the, while they're sitting there bullshitting with each other in their horns of ale, all the other side get together and they're like, we're not going to do this. And they say, yeah, we're done. So you guys figure this out. We're going home.
We're going to go elect someone else.
Yeah.
Frank's going to do it.
New leader. Frank's good. And he's cool with all of us. So. Mm-hmm.
I just think Frank from Shameless and no.
Yeah, no, that's not good.
I think Frank from Always Sunny.
Neither
of
them.
We should have a war. War, guys, a war. You guys go fight. I'm going to go bang some whores.
We have another hashtag no ship from Christian Callahan. He says, I want to like Ube, but man, he should have slapped the shit out of Ivar. If not after the throne drink, then as soon as he said, you are no longer my eyes, turn them from very blue to royal, out this bitch. Hashtag no ship. Hashtag Viking season 5.
Ube would have just pulled out the glove and would have been like, smacked him, you know, just like an English gentleman type thing.
Well, Ube's been very much turning the other cheek this episode, until the battle.
Right. But that's not how they, I mean, the Kattegat side is taking the moral high ground, like I said before, but turning the other cheek is another thing. Like, you know, I think if Harold had went in for another swing at Halfdan, there would have been a block and a parry kind of thing. So I don't know if they're turning the other cheek. I don't think they are.
Well, it's like part of their strategy, because they really went after him at every angle possible to have peace. Every angle. That's why Bjorn was last and was like, look, if you come with us, we can just take Harold out, you know?
Right. So. He's no threat without your forces.
Exactly.
You know, he's just a guy, you know, saber rattling kind of thing. So
now we have a pause before battle where we see Aethelwulf and Aethelred train for battle in Wessex. Judith and Alfred look on, and we learn of some discord between Alfred and his father in name, as well as, I think, a little bit of Aethelred there. And I think that's the most important part of the scene. And we learn that through their discussion about how he reports about his time in Lindisfarne, because she asks like what he thinks they should do as far as like the monks being afraid of a future Viking attack. And he talks about building a navy, and she tells him how he should tell his father about that. And he says he wouldn't listen. It's weird because it seems like we have like a negative cast on Aethelwulf now.
Yeah, it does. That wasn't there before. Like, you never really got the impression before this scene that Alfred felt anything but a sort of like benevolence for his dad.
Yeah.
You know, you never thought that he was, in the beginning of the season, I honestly felt like he kind of looked up to him. And now it's like he's almost like he's accelerated past. And he goes, you know, I'm past what he can teach me and what he can give me. I have to go out on my own and do pilgrimages to Lindisfarne and read a bunch of books and cultivate my own sense of personality and leadership or whatever. But he's kind of right. And there's that, it's giving you that fast forward schism almost between him and his brother, because I think Æthelwulf is looking at Æthelred and saying, that's my own flesh and blood. I want him to be the king. You know, I want to train him as a great warrior, and I want him to take the throne when I die. While this,
it's also his eldest son.
Yeah.
And that's the way.
That's important too. Yeah, that is a thing. But I, you know, the similarity in their names, the actual flesh and blood relation, mm-hmm. and the eldest thing all play into it. So I don't think that Æthelwulf has a disdain for Alfred. I think it's more like the other way around.
Yeah.
I think he's just kind of seeing the cracks in the pavement there and going, this guy's so set in his ways. You know, this is why I think he might be seeing a little bit of why Ecgbert didn't put a whole lot of faith in Æthelwulf until he had to.
Makes me wonder if there's some deleted.
There's possibly. Definitely deleted scenes. There's always deleted mm-hmm. scenes. We just have to take it for granted now, I think.
And it's getting a little annoying that he has the perfect answer to every problem. It's like, of course he's thinking of a navy. Of course. It's like, it would get on my nerves after a while. Like, I get it. Can I just try and be a better dad than my dad was and spend some time with my son doing stuff that we like? That's all he was doing.
He's training
him, but he's being a better dad.
He is being a better dad.
And a much better,
Alfred has no idea about that because he's always saying positive things about his grandfather.
Yeah, he was Grandpa Joe's favorite, you know? So, of course, he's like, you know, he's dumb. We should be reading and building ships. Now, it was a fantastic idea, but it rubbed me a little wrong that it's like, come on, man. Give this kid one bad idea for me just so he's not, like, too perfect all the time. You know, it's aggravating. No one's that great. It's like the Kwisatz Haderach of leaders over in England, you know?
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Maybe we could have him behind something like, you know, leeching. Yeah. You know, like he's really behind that as a medical breakthrough.
Leeching,
like, just put leeches on people, and
something.
it'll cure them. I promise,
like,
it'll work.
Heal me in the swamp.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Because I did. I took that scene. He's just trying to be a good guy with this kid. It's just crazy.
And Em had pointed out when we were watching it that the non-age difference between, you know, the actors playing Judith.
I mean, this conversation's been going on.
Okay. Well, we don't have to go too far into it. But I was looking at this particular scene when they were talking up there in the the overlook or whatever. If there was no sound to it and you didn't know what you were watching, you weren't a Vikings fan, you would think they were a couple, or you would think that they were planning to, mm-hmm. you know, the way they kind of get conspiratorially close to each other, you would think, oh, these two people are about to hook up.
The way that I've gotten over it, because I thought about this on the last episode, is I think that they're marrying at super young ages, these women, yes, at like 13 or 14, and they're having these kids, so that's why they look this way. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
So, and also within this pause before battle, we're back in Iceland. Loki plays with his raven while everyone else works building the temple. He suggested Kool-Aid Girl, still annoying me.
So Kool-Aid Girl, that flat nose is her dad, and I didn't realize it till this episode, even though there is a scene in a previous episode where he takes another woman's hand in a...
So is that her mom?
I think so.
Okay.
Or at least her stepmom. I mean, I don't know. You know, people die stuff. So, but you know, it's Viking culture. So it's his life mate. So
Michael Guy says Loki is running a cult. Hashtag Vikings. Hashtag no ship.
Just not very well at this point.
He's got some believers.
Yeah. But I mean, you don't want anybody dissenting as much as Eivind is on your island, you know?
Well, you don't, but I don't know. I have a theory about this.
All right.
What is it?
Oh, I think they're dead. You know how they go missing? I think Floki killed him because he's sitting there like extra, like that look he had whenever he killed Athelstan. You know, it's kind of like ashamed, angry. He's over there brooding with his pet. People are missing.
Yeah. It's a smoke monster.
No.
Polar bears would actually fit in.
John Locke is on the island. Now, I didn't think of that, but now that you said it, I'm thinking back to when
Eivind
is talking his shit about, like, going, oh, Kettle Flatnose wants to lick Floki's ass. If you notice Floki's cup, he's drinking, it's shaking a little bit when he brings it up to his mouth because he's very, very angry about the situation.
No, he's hoping that his ass gets licked.
Oh, he's hopeful.
I've got some honey.
So, Kettle Flatnose, what do you think about what Avon said?
All right, now we're to the battle. Both armies are immense in number. Haman taunts Ivar about his sword slaking its thirst upon pagan blood. As Ube predicted, Ivar anticipates the threat against their ships, so he orders some of their forces to head off that probability. Harald sends Astrid with Ivar. The armies ready themselves. Bjorn and Harald announce attack, and both sides charge. Ivar pauses his battalion from going forward so he can listen. He needs to know if he is right or wrong. And I feel like that's the essence of Ivar.
Yes. Well, this made me pause because when he sends his brother into the woods, right, and Harald's army goes in, I was like, well, he's smart because he just saved a large portion of the forces and his brother from going into battle. So by weakening Harald a little bit, gives him more of a chance to possibly later on in the future take control if they win. And kind of like, see if his, I don't know if he expected to win this first battle too, because I think he had an idea of what Bjorn was going to do, because he says it a little bit, but by sitting there and waiting, like you said, it's his essence of who he is. We're also seeing the strategy form, I think, for the next battle as he's listening. Because, you know, every time they go in, they made him scream, or they don't make him, but they scream and shout. So he hears all these different forces go in. So he knew once Lagertha's people came out of the woods and then Bjorn's go in, that was most likely the rest of the forces. So when he's telling Astrid, look, sit here and wait and be patient because we might not have to go all the way there and then leave our forces without anybody helping them to back up. So there's like a lot of different angles that he was doing. It was smart strategy on his part. It really was. Even though they lost, but it's only the first battle in a long war, I'm sure.
The dungeon mastering pays off.
Yes,
exactly. Organizing the armies finally. It has a practical use, goddammit. That makes it a little bit more understandable, like what was going on in that scene, because he was like telling her to be quiet because he's like, I have to listen, you know, I have to hear what's going on to know if something is happening. And I had entertained the notion that he was going to let Harald's forces hang in the breeze. But then I was like, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, because then is he supposed to take his small band of people and then try to fight? But I think, you know, it could make sense if you're looking at it, the balance of power, because there's people who are loyal to Ivar and people who are loyal to Harald, and they're on the same page at this point, but that could change later on.
Yeah, and that was just my first initial thing, was that he was doing that. But then you see him
emotional later.
Exactly. The emotion that he shows later, and then the way that he was sitting there and listening, it was like when you play chess, you know, you're going to see a move and then you're going to make a reaction off it. Sometimes you know what your opponent's going to do ahead of time, or at least you hope you do. So by kind of figuring, especially you and I have played a lot of chess together, we know kind of how each other plays. And being in battle with Bjorn the way that he is, he was just kind of maneuvering pieces. Knowing his brother, that's why I think this is after the initial thought that I had, sending him into the woods, I think he knew he wasn't the type of person that was going to sit in there, because it's the first time you see him lead his own group to fight to the death and lose that whole section of his army. I think he kind of knew that if I'm right, they're going to come back running, because he's going to retreat. He's not going to be too stupid and try and lose a battle possibly in that side of the woods. And if it does work out, we can flank him. You know, I appreciated Ivar's strategy in a losing fight. You know, it was interesting.
Yeah, because you have to be flexible. You have to know how to retreat with a certain amount of tactical advantage or whatever you can scrape out of it.
Yeah.
Rather than just throwing everything at the wall and then going, oh, fuck, that didn't work. Back up.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
So, you know, you were just talking about Fitzurk, and as you described, he is in the woods. He's leading this horse through that wooded area. And we already knew from last episode that the Sami are great warriors, especially within a wooded area. And that's who they are attacked by. He has to call for a shield wall. Meanwhile, the main battle rages on with Bjorn and Harald, sending more men into the fray in waves. Fitzurk and his men are like sitting ducks as they sit behind their shields in the forest. The Sami are able to come up behind and begin shooting their projectiles at their sixes. Fitzurk tells his men to go back. Even as they run away, they are overwhelmed and they take losses.
And I called bullshit on the blowguns in Europe, you know, and I instantly went to my phone and Googled it. And sure enough, the website that I found didn't give dates of when they came around, but there were blowguns in Europe. I was just like, blowguns in Europe. Because you always think like South America, Central America, the Native Americans had blowguns. Yeah. I never even thought of blowguns being in like Norway and Sweden and parts of Europe, but they were around. It was really cool. That's a bit of history from the History Channel.
I agree with that we normally think that, and I think it's because of what we're shown in movies.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, because the first thing I thought when I saw those, I was like thinking, like, the voice in my head goes, like, it is too bad you don't speak Jovitos.
Yes, yes, yes.
Belloc, because they had all the blow darts were coming out, and yes, you know,
that's
but
good.
So yeah, but you do identify or like link that weapon, mm-hmm. that particular weapon up with indigenous cultures in South America. You know, it's not something you think of happening way, way up there in the north.
Yeah, pretty cool.
And I also thought that another thing that's illustrative of Fitzurk is just he just doesn't make any decisions whatsoever. So
yeah, no. But at least he was smart enough to know he was in a losing battle, though. Yeah, like, I'll give him that, because they were going to wipe them out without even shedding blood on their side with those blowguns. They were nasty with them.
It seemed like he gave them plenty of time to, like, work their way around to their backside.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But they were shooting those arrows off into the woods, and it's like, oh, dude, you're going to die. We're going to see you die with a dart in your face or something. You know, it was pretty cool.
Fitzurk's at this point, he's just like a Monty Python knight. Run away! Run away!
Run away!
So now we have Harold leading his next charge into battle. He and Halfdan are not far from each other as they slice and chop. Harold yells to Halfdan, "Still no regrets, brother?" Halfdan yells back, "What is there to regret? You haven't won yet." And every time I've watched that, it made me laugh out loud.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that scene. He's like, quit your gloating. You know, you haven't even done anything. You know, we're still in the middle of it.
It was very Highlander-y, you know, where they're in battles and shouting across. And it was nice because I think if they had really had any malice towards each other, they would have seen each other and gone straight for it. Because we saw Ragnar and Rollo in the middle of a battle see each other, and they were like magnets to each other. So this kind of shows that, okay, we're going to fight against each other, but we're just going to kill everybody else and hopefully around. Not have to face off. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic like y'all did. It was hilarious. You kind of needed that bit of humor with everything else, because they show you some pretty graphic things in this battle.
Yeah.
Man, the aforementioned arm that was dangling, and then the one shield maiden who's getting a shield slammed into her spine.
Oh,
so even if she lives, she's going to be dead because she can't move.
No. Uh-uh. He smashed her all over with that shield. It was terrible. Shocking. Now it makes me wonder what everybody else in the world got added on to that.
Exactly. Yeah, what kind of cool shit did they get to see that we didn't?
Bjorn waits for Lagertha's forces to threaten Harald's flank before he leads his charge. Harald sees Lagertha emerge in the forest behind them, and his face purples with rage. Astrid tells Ivar they should go and help. He thinks they should wait. Good things come to those who wait. The battle is in its peak, and there are so many we care for that could meet their end. The violence is definitely turned up. As you guys have described, the shield maiden is beaten to death brutally by a shield, and there also is a man with his mutilated arm just hanging, like, I don't know, chopped meatball strings.
Ugh.
It was shocking because I didn't expect it. It was like, okay, this is going to be not as bloody as some battles, but they brought it. I'll give them that. They got away with some nastiness.
Some gore. A horn blows, signifying Harald's need for aid. Astrid and Ivar hear this. Astrid says they need us, but Ivar thinks it is too late. I really worried for Torvi and Guthrum during this battle. I was tearing up. I like Torvi. I think she's a cool character, but it surprises me sometimes, the emotion that wells up within me in moments like this.
It just got you to that point.
This battle was really emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Haman sees Lagertha, and time slows down. He is soon taken out by a sword to the head, to the back of the head. Harald yells for retreat. His forces flee with many bodies left behind. We have a hashtag no ship from Jasmine Nightbloom, and she says, Haman sees Lagertha on the battlefield. This magic moment.
Oh, yeah.
Cue sword across the back. Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no ship. I did wonder about that because it did seem like time slowed down, and at first I thought maybe he was like, this is the person that I need to go after. This is the target. But I think there's a lot of stuff that he has thought, and she's also thought, that is the pull of fate. So I think he saw her and he felt whatever he feels, because he keeps talking about how his God has placed him here, and he felt something when he saw her. And so he, whatever that is, it's he believes it's his Lord speaking to him, I think,
that,
about her.
And has he ever seen a female warrior as formidable as her? You know, I'm sure they saw some in the fights with the Vikings, but, you know, Lagertha's special in how she fights and everything about her. I mean, we've all agreed on this. So I think when he saw her, like you said, there was the spiritual aspect and then the awe of seeing this woman just throw criticals left and right. And as beautiful as she is on top of it, you know, and it makes me wonder if anybody pointed her out that she's a leader. It might be the first time it's the close up of the leader. And then his libido, you know, hasn't, you know, might have been a little bit of libido magnetism there.
Yeah.
Because both of them are, you know, horny people, saying, might be a hookup.
Well, I'm sure he knows who she is, probably because of Ivar, you know, ranting and raving about her.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, had he ever seen her, though? That was my question. From across the battlefield, maybe. This might have been his first really close up. And then to think of all the, because somebody had to tell him of how powerful of a shield maiden she is, mm-hmm. you know, and then she was throwing criticals like the rest of the critical club that was going around there. They were all throwing one shots on everybody.
What, you know, one thing that occurs to me is he sees her and this is the person that Ivar has sworn his mm-hmm. life to kill. And this is the person that killed his mother and is the, he's looking at her and thinking about that and going, this is where all of this anger and rage and frustration comes from, this one woman.
Yeah.
And so who knows what's running through his mind, but he's trying to like square that up with what he sees in front of him. And he's thinking like, he's not going to be able to do that, you know, not by himself. Hmm. She's still standing and, you know, I mean, of course she had a shield and he got hit from behind, but I mean, she made it through more of the battle than he did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, kudos to him for not having a shield that whole time. I mean, he really had like the Christian magic going on there.
For sure.
Cause, you know, that was like some, I mean, he just was like, kept going to the 4 points, you know, just turn.
Him and Bjorn both.
I'm just going to put it out there. Like, if Haymond and Lagertha bone, you're going to hear me bitch so much about it. Just so you know.
I know. I agree. But I just have this feeling that they're going to bone.
No.
I'm
on the censor board.
I really hope that it's not going to happen, but we're dealing with Hurst here. So.
And Lagertha
has boned Ekbert.
No, yes.
What?
She boned Ekbert,
and she has had sex with a prisoner this year. So I'm just saying. And he is quite the looker. I'm just saying. I mean, we've seen gratuitous sex out of both of them this season. The beginning. And,
yeah.
Yep.
You know, we haven't seen as much from Haymond as I thought we would. Is the way we were introduced to him last season. I thought we were going to see him boning all over Wessex and all over, you know, wherever. Yeah.
So maybe Hurst is saving it up so he can be boning the one person we don't want to see him boning.
Exactly. I'm just saying there's a chance. They met. They both fell for each other on first glance.
No, it wasn't. It was fate. Reunited with Ivar, Harald reports that they are lost and that Haymond is dead. Lagertha walks among the dead at the sight of one fallen warrior. She says it is fate. Next, she is drawn to Haymond, at first by his sword. She feels a pull towards him and wants him saved.
Your sword is so nice. Mm.
You know what? Damn it.
Come on.
The sword is a phallic symbol.
She rolls him over and sees his face and she's like, no, save him. She waits a second, like looks at him and is like, no, mommy like.
So I just wanted to say something about the retreating forces. You know, given the fact that life is, like I mentioned before, just going to go back to whatever it was before if you don't die, it seems to me like the best move at that point, there's like mist on the ground, there's a little bit of chaos or a lot mm-hmm. of chaos going on. Just throw down your shield, pick up a dead soldier's shield, you know what I mean, from the other team, and just defect.
Yeah.
And then just kind of come over and hang around Ube and Lagertha and just kind of wipe your brow and be like, wow. We really got those guys on the run, didn't we?
Yeah.
Is it mead time yet? Let's go. Let's head back to Kattegat.
Who are you? Sigmund Freud.
yeah.
The fisherman. Yeah, that's it.
My name is I am Bjorn Iverson. That's my name. That's actually the name of a guy who's in a band that I listen to.
Bjorn Iverson? Nice.
Yeah. His middle name is probably Ragnar, but I mean.
All right. You guys ready for feedback?
Yeah. What a great episode.
That was a great episode. Mm-hmm. Agree.
First up, we have someone named Colm, who is a first-time writer, and he says his subject is Vikings censorship. He says, right, folks, mini rant here. In regards to the censored content, I am flabbergasted. You lot act surprised that certain scenes are cut, however, quickly complain when certain scenes in past episodes cross your moral threshold and deem them as unnecessary and controversial. Newsflash, the Vikings raped, murdered, and pillaged, and this show is supposed to represent the barbaric nature of the Scandinavian tribes of over 1,000 years ago, and also show off the wonderful feats that they accomplished in wooden boats, along with showing off a more human side to them that is rarely seen. But they were far from wonderful people. If this show is to be taken seriously as a piece of art, then it should address the good and the bad qualities equally. This is Norway in the 700s. This is not California in 2018.
Wait,
so
what?
So squirming each and every time rape or the idea that the Vikings also sacrificed children along with women on screen is absolutely absurd. Especially if it's for character development, which every scene is, and to reflect an accurate depiction of the life back in them days. Ivar the Boneless was apparently ruthless. I want to see how far down the rabbit hole goes for such a character. I want media that is based on actual history to teach me and truly reflect its period. The most powerful form of entertainment for me is watching this shite things that have happened in the past, as it lets us embrace what we have now. The moment you start picking and choosing what we should tell our kids, then, well, you may as well tell them that the Lord of the Rings is real. This goes beyond what? This show. You didn't know it. You just,
fuck.
You know, sometimes Santa Claus gets ruined. Now Paul just got ruined for Lord of the Rings. He knows it's not real. Thanks, amen. Colin. Thanks. Thanks, bud. So he goes on to say, this goes beyond the show. Just the idea of censorship in itself. Being Irish myself, there is little in the way of visual representation of our great history that has made its way into film, which is crazy in itself. The Vikings came here, led by Ivar. He eventually became the king of Dublin, so hopefully this show stays around long enough for us to see the battles here. Things have turned out all right. Anyway, sorry if I sounded hostile. We're a tad more blunt here in Ireland and tend to say things as they are instead of saying things to tick boxes or fit into a social quota, which I love about this great slang column. Okay. First of all, I just want to say thank you for listening to the podcast.
For sure.
And thanks for taking time to write in some feedback. We appreciate it regardless. I'm glad you're enjoying the show because we are too. Just to hit up some points, first and foremost, we have probably made a little bit of a mistake in having a inside joke, right? About the censors.
Yeah.
Because a couple of seasons back, it may have been more than that. It's been going on for a while now. Some of our, and I don't know how long you've been listening to our coverage of the shows, but a few seasons, we'll just say a few seasons ago or more, some of our listeners came up with a term for us, calling us censors, because Paul and I were notorious for having like some issues with certain sex scenes. Not that we felt like they shouldn't have been included, but we were kind of criticizing them when they seemed a little bit superfluous to the story exactly. at hand, and a little bit excessive and sometimes just crappy as as certain shows are wont to be in certain areas. So they came up with this joking nickname for us as the censors. So anytime that there was going to be a sex scene, some of the listeners would say, I can't wait to see what the censors are going to have to say about this.
Yeah, and most of the censorship discussion that happens here, it has to do with sex, not violence.
Right, definitely, because we're all for the violence. You know, it's America after all. When you hear us referring, I'm not sure how long you've been listening to the actual podcast, but when you hear us referring to being censors, it's a completely tongue-in-cheek joke. We got the piss taken out of us with that, as, you know, people in the British Isles like to say. And so we just kind of go along with it for fun. We have no interest or desire for censorship whatsoever. We want this show to be the best it can be and to show us everything that it can show us. And I actually agree with a lot of the points that you're making here. The one thing, when we complained about the deleted scenes being taken out, it was for the very reason of character development. Because we don't get an accurate read on how these characters are developing if you leave out stuff like child sacrifice. It's not that we are moralistically opposed to child sacrifice we are in the sense that any human being who lives in this day and age should be.
Yeah.
But it's not that we're opposed to seeing it on the show or seeing characters do it. We just want to be shown that as the American audience so we can have the proper assessment of this character's development as the show goes on, because that's our stock and trade. We're podcasters. We need those pieces of information. So we get a little bit rubbed the wrong way if they're not included, but it's not about our moral objection to one scene or another. And then, what you said, this goes beyond the show into censorship in general and stuff like that. We have problems with rape because we live in the day and age that we live in. We don't have a problem with rape on the show, but because we are human beings with human sensibilities, it is going to make us squirm. But we are in no way, shape, or form advocating that it not be shown to us.
Yeah,
we're with you on the same page. We want it to be as reflective of that time period as possible. But I think it would be remiss if we didn't comment on the fact that Hearst has used rape as a way to show us what's going on with a certain character's story arc. So when you have Rollo committing rape, it's a signifier that he's going down into a bad path. When Lagertha commits rape earlier in the season against Harold, it's showing us that there's bad character qualities at play in her development mm-hmm. as a character. So then you have some characters who have never had that happen, like Ragnar, Floki, Athelstan, etc. So, and these people have stayed above and beyond that in a certain moralistic sense. So Hearst is using rape in a somewhat artistic and creative way as a road sign for a certain character's development. But once again, I have to reiterate that even though we comment on that and talk about it, and yeah, even get squeamish about it sometimes and go like, that scene doesn't work for us, we are not advocating that we don't see it.
Yeah,
it would be crazy if we didn't comment on it, actually.
Exactly. Our job doing a podcast is to give opinions on the show. That's how I feel about certain mm-hmm. things that happen. I can't help it. I'm not going to change it. I'm not trying to fluff it either. You know, it's just, I'm going to give you my honest opinion about a scene. You know, that's the simple... It's a simple way to talk about it.
I totally agree with this, too, when he says, or Colin, when you say, the most powerful form of entertainment for me is watching this shite things that have happened in the past, as it lets us embrace what we have now. I completely agree with that statement. But when you go on to say, the moment you start picking and choosing what we should and should tell our kids, is you may as well tell them that the Lord of the Rings is real. So just to stress that, I can't stress this enough. The censorship stuff is a joke, and we don't want to change the content of anything yeah. that is presented to us. We want it as raw and unfiltered as it is. But what we do is comment on how the people who perpetrate those actions, what it means to their character to have been doing that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to, because I think it's an important thing, and it pushes forth the discussion of the stuff. And one final thing I have to say, and you guys can take it from there, because I've already said a bunch, is that when it comes to the sex scenes, there's a difference between, I'm down with any sex scene. It's just that I want it to fit into the general schematic of the story in a comfortable way. And when I say comfortable, meaning that it pushes the story forward in a meaningful direction, and it isn't just
sex for sex's sake.
Yeah, it isn't just gratuitous. And it's not that I have a problem seeing sex on screen at all. I'm a red-blooded male, just, you know, like any other red-blooded male. I've got no problem with that. It looks great. But time and place, I feel like when those things aren't done correctly and they're not executed well, it doesn't come off as sexy. It comes off as a disservice to the story, yeah. and it pulls you out of your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, waste of time.
So, did you guys have anything to add?
We complain more about censorship than we actually ask for there are things to be censored.
It was a good point bringing up. I take it for granted that people don't know that that's a running joke. You know, it's been going on for several years, so that good point on bringing it up. I mean, you did excellent.
Well, Em had brought that to my attention because she had heard some other podcasters talking about how it's kind of a no-no to have inside jokes mm-hmm. exactly for reasons like this. And this is the first time it's really hit home for us, you know, because I always felt that we've had a relatively small listenership. But as it grows and people come in and they come in off of Jump Street and start listening, and then they're like, what are these guys talking about censoring something? Why would they want to do that? So I get that. So just as long as we put it out there to other people who might not know what's going on, that's been explained now. And it's just a joke that we have. But anyway, thanks for writing, and thanks for listening to the podcast, and hopefully you continue to do so. And yeah, a big part of my ethnic makeup is Irish as well. So I think it would be great if they followed Ivar's story that far. I would like to see that.
Yeah, I want them to follow until Ivar is dead.
Yeah. All right. Up next is Benny Jessica. And the header up here says, no matter how many sons Ragnar had, not even all of them together can replace him. You know, Jessica, I thought about you one of the times I was watching this episode, because at the very beginning, they still have Travis Fimmel's voice saying previously on Viking. So, I mean, do you just keep rewinding that part? Or
best part of the show.
Yeah. And she says, ha ha ha, Ivar, the master of strategies, got burned. So funny. You could just see his mind spinning and him wanting to throw a tantrum. Ivar must be the forefather of all egomaniac psychopaths. His unpredictable behavior and the let's settle this without poking each other with swords meeting was beyond cray cray. It's also funny that Ivar, who is a big baby himself, has a defiant teen, Haven, to parent. Ivar's like, you're doing this for me. Me, not your god. And Haven puts his headphones on and is like, you don't understand shit, Pops. Your gods are like so 700s.
I like that analogy.
Ivar is over the top insane. If he wants to kill Lags, why didn't he throw his knife in her face at the meeting just to get it done? He threw an axe in Sigurd's face. Why is he so composed sometimes? He needs to be diagnosed so I can get him. He chose to not aid his army. Go lay down on a couch and get a prescription before your fan club thinks you are an unloyal coward, Ivar. Love the Sami style of fighting. Not so fond of their S&M style of lovemaking. By the way, Snowfrid means snow peace / serenity. Such an unfitting name for the girl who married the wrong bro. If there is a right girl for Ivar, it's Snowfrid. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, she would... Yeah, I'm not even going to go there. Is Margaret going to kill Torvi's kids? They are before her in the line of succession, and she seems to be very keen for the crown. I think that is why she hates Lags. She was closer to the crown when her husband's mother was queen. Now Bjorn and his kids are next in line for succession. As far as Margaret killing Torvi's kids, we kind of touched on that on the podcast. Let's hope that doesn't happen, but
yeah.
You bring up a good point. They are ahead of her in succession.
I mean, Bjorn is supposed to actually have a lot of kids. So
yeah.
At some point, they have to live.
Yeah, some of these kids have to make it to
that's
adulthood.
That's why he has so many. This law of averages, you know?
I think he's supposed to have a lot of descendants is what I mean. So they have to live long enough to procreate.
Oh. Right, so he's going to have to get busy knocking up Snayfrid or Snowfrid and getting on with things because at this point, there's only two that are actually his. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it three? No, it's two.
That's two.
Yeah, so.
Guthrum's not his, that's Borg.
Right. Borg. And then, you know, little baby Siggy is probably still in the river because no one cares.
Circle of life, right?
Something mass now.
So she goes on to say, thanks for your always great podcast, Jess. P.S. You talked about censoring and commercials last time. I'm in Scandinavia. I watch Vikings on HBO Nordic. It's like Netflix here with a monthly fee. No commercials. We get all the sex and kid killing. But the episodes are just 44 minutes long. See, our episodes are 44 minutes long. So
maybe they're cutting something.
So they're, but that, yeah, so that means they're cutting something out of what you guys see and we see. So there's just two different versions altogether. So they have.
Yeah.
Why?
That makes no sense at all.
I'd like to see them side by side. Like, I want to watch our version. I want to watch their version. I must do some digging. This has to be done.
They want us to buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, they want us. They want everybody to buy the Blu-ray.
Sneaky.
You know what happens is you guys get all the sex and violence and kid killing and rape, and we get more of the less interesting conversations that go on between characters sometimes. You know? So anytime there's like a 10-minute, you know, thing between Alfred and his mom, we know that someone's getting fucked somewhere on an HBO Nordic and we're not getting to see it. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. All right, up next we have Dunkin' Donuts. And Donuts says, so a Viking, a Saxon, and Thor walk into a bar. I really have a punchline for that, just like Ivar didn't when he started this battle of words that he never intended to follow through with. But I guess Harald did have a punchline.
Ooh. Smack.
It's been a minute since we've seen actual Vikings fight each other on this scale, not just, say, Franks or Saxons trained in limited Viking tactics, so this was exciting. I'm worried that because Halfdan has fulfilled his quest of self-definition and made a stand as an honorable man, this might be it for him. As much as I enjoy the visual of those flags in formation, the crouch and retreat in unison really killed me. I was waiting for them to start doing split jumps across the field and singing Vikings. Miserable. It was too much. Also too much. How hard Fitzwerk's people went down when shot by a dart. I mean, come on, LOL.
They could be poisoned.
It could be.
Like have one like
a quick acting poison.
Yeah, like one of those instant ones where it just, and then you're down. Like it's some sort of crazy neurotoxin.
It would have been funny if they had shown him like grabbing at him and cursing like, what the fuck? And then just, they fell. It was pretty instant. I didn't even think about that until she brought it up. It was very, very, very fast. And they were going down pretty fucking hard. We'll just say it's the armor.
There has to be a poison because not all of them were hit like in the head or the neck. You know, some of them were hit in other places. And
maybe they were trank darts.
Yeah. They're not really dead.
I was too busy thinking about the stupid blowguns to notice. I was like, whoa, what is this?
What's that type of bird? That gets like, or that animal that gets scared and freezes and then it falls over.
Oh, the goats.
Out of the tree.
Oh,
the
no.
Goats.
The baby goats will do it on the ground. Goats. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's going on. They're just like, ah.
Blowguns.
Dennis goes on to say, Bjorn really felt like an admirable leader here, from negotiations to commander. I agree with that.
Agreed. Oh, yeah.
Ube standing there staring off with the light in his blue eyes, casually but firmly interrogating Fitzurk. Yet again, he pulled off a major Ragnar move. Eivind is so realistic as a pessimist. Trouble is, he's pretending like he didn't know Floki could be like this when he's old enough to have fought at the Siege of Paris. Good point.
Yeah, good point.
Lastly, I have to put in a prayer request at Thor's temple for my dude Dreamwolf. If you look at that camera work, he is getting the old and sloppy edit in the courtyard and keeps saying, my son, Æthelred. That can only mean he's done for. So Hurst will have a new sibling rivalry for 5B. If you think about it, there isn't much left for him to do, and York's loss really seems to have finished him off emotionally. Alas, alas, sobbing in old English, the donuts. Yeah, it does seem like we're going to say goodbye to Æthelwulf here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, wrapping it up with, because I think the focus going forward in England is going to be on Alfred and Æthelred.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe their really, really young mom.
Yeah, and you know, we have an episode that's based on the discord between brothers. So the one scene we have with Alfred is planting the idea for this is this discord there among brothers that we really haven't seen before until now, even though we've had already 7 episodes prior to.
Right, they, like that late season rush, you know, to get certain storylines that are going to be a little bit more prominent and important in 5B, just kind of get them in under the wire here at the last of it. Like, well, the only thing that the England scene is going to be good for is to give you a sense of this tension that we hadn't given you at all before. So
but
here it is.
Thematically, it has its place, so, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's, I mean, the challenges of juggling all of these storylines and writing them are greater than I can even imagine. I wouldn't have been able to pull off any of this. I mean,
Especially 20 episodes. Like, 6 episodes would be super easy, but 20? Fuck.
Yeah, because if you know your story, 6 episodes might not even be enough, so everything's just getting, like, Campbell's soup condensed. But when you spread out to 20, you have to, like... But then, you know, when you have that much time, it seems like you could have given us a 3 or 4 minute scene like this was in an earlier episode, and I don't know. But
just one bad mistake. That's all I'm pulling for that B. One mistake this kid makes. He can't be perfect. He can't.
It's leeches. It's going to be leeches.
Okay. I'm going with leeches.
What it is he's going to burn some bread.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Little Miss Perfect, or Little Mr. Perfect can't cook toast. What?
Yeah. So I'm not a baker. So what? I've been to Rome.
Yeah. Why don't you just go to the swamp?
But that is the historical story of Alfred, by the way.
Oh, yeah? Oh, wow. Yeah. Good.
Okay.
Good. It makes me feel better.
I wonder if this is like a George Washington chopping down the apple tree story, though. Yeah. Which actually most likely didn't happen.
Yeah. Sounds like he was a know-it-all back then, and they had to make him human a little bit. He burned some bread. See? He's not perfect. I felt a little better, and it didn't even happen in the show. It was like, all right, cool. He's not. We're good. He can't cook. Ha.
Ha.
All right, so that has been our coverage of this episode. I hope you enjoyed us. Join us again next week at the same time, and we'll do it all over again. Thanks to everybody who wrote in, the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, this has been a No Shit Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
Axe time.
Sword time.
Shields are splintered and splitting a shield maiden's spine.
Oh my god, that was so horrible.
It was awful.
Like, it was almost worse than the arm one.
It was. I think it was.